Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This podcast, While Walking, well, I talk about the progress towards building the ultimate portable chem lab, school chem lab. So it's will be in a plastic box called ORAC, Observe, Reason, and Conceptualize. So it's an educational theme, and it's got a series of things. It's a thing that you pull out. It's battery controlled or battery powered, and it transmits to the internet, and all the information while it's on is archived and read. And I'm up to this stage of completing, I suppose, what you call the research prototype, where the aim is to get the components working and you work out, you know, how to do the production prototype. So that's up and running. And so I have it just what we call chundering out to the internet every second. I have three weight sensors and a temperature thermocouple reading, and this is just running an Arduino board and a Wi-Fi interface, nothing special. Any kid at a science fair or robotics competition will get some of this done. And my learning curve has been one of a humble thing of really someone in isolation. So what's happened is I occasionally send people, a friend, a help. Like, I've tried it, it's just not working. And generally in the 6 hours after I send it, I have a go and get things working. So with this is at the moment, this little crystal, this little glowing box. It's got the LED lights lighting up eerily in the night, and it's just producing days of data. And bit by bit, I've written the LabVIEW software such that, so I'm breathing hard as I'm beginning to go up the slope. And it's a tough ask, all this type of stuff. So I show the background that I'm doing rehab, just losing weight, building up cognitive capacity, building up physical stamina, and it's just a real, real hard thing. And I'm thinking while talking, and that was perambulate. Well, I think I've forgotten what the word is, but Aristotle and a lot of very famous people used to. I think mostly Aristotle, mainly. I don't know anyone else when I think of it, did this thing where they actually... it would be a bit of a disaster, sort of it's dangling at me, and this is my digital phone, which is recording. That would have been... further and further away. Now, there's the technical aspect, and I'm, I suppose, a scientist with a sort of a military, I'm not going to say huge military, don't go around saying it, but a strategic background, saying, where's Australia now? What's happening? What's holding it off? How do we cut through? And what's the game changer? And the game changer is your science teacher is limited in what they can do, because the equipment they come out has such a large overhead of wires and distractions, and what it produces is full of errors and stuff like that. And we know going in the next 20 or 50 years, there's going to be a revolution. So everything you do, your curtains, your home, be all connected to the internet, your toaster, everything will be the internet, and it'll be all responding. And your energy usage will drop, your security perhaps will increase, and the world will be a happier place. There'll be driverless cars, and things will be in a way, and we will look back into this era, because people will be doing movies. Imagine when people only had mobile phones, and they had to think and do everything. They couldn't actually do philosophy and stuff like that. So this is a hands-free kit, and so far I can describe it. There's the tile. Above the tile is strain sensors. We have three strain sensors, so your tripod sits on it. You can look, experiment with those, and everything is sitting there. And I'm up to the point of, yeah, I've done the research prototype. I know, you know what the power demands are and what the constraints are, and I now know what to do, and I can flip through, and I know it's not going to go this way, it's going to go that way, and have selected things. Now, the first piece of good luck is that for roughly $90 Australian or $50 US, if you're lucky, I can buy everything, all fresh and all on spec. And what's a little bit more encouraging in that because it's, I can monitor everything, and engineer things such that it measures a hundredth of a degree and micrograms using standard equipment, because I have the maths and the algorithms. Just when it's free flowing, I can pick it up and nail it. And this is one of the things I'm doing at the moment, is saying, oh, monitoring these sensors over a couple of days and saying, oh, what do I have to do to nail this one? So people who know me know that I have done that to nail these very small signals with high precision. And so, say, I'm building robots to line up optical fiber second, so they're going to pick up nothing and steer in the robots and the various things to line up optical fibers and lasers. So that's my specialty. So I can go out, and at this stage I know pretty precisely what are the patentable money spinners, which are not worth putting together. So I go to the production phase, and then we'll talk about it. So, and this is again understanding the Australian environment and going across. Now, I don't know if I said this. I have a mystery sponsor. So all of this is done through something called the Glenbrook Advanced Concept Institute. So I think you'd be the only person, well, there's a lot of people active in it. I'm the only person keen goals. And it has a receiving station, and someone's covering the cost. So I don't have to worry about that. I will obviously try and sell one unit off to a few universities as we get closer down the track. So that's a great thing. So I've hit the button, and basically a month, the stuff will start hitting us. And I suppose there was this sort of eerie feeling when I got used to the strategy of this new electronics. The old electronics is your fundamental discrete components being sold together into discrete circuits, being built up together and tested and measured with your oscilloscopes and time, and you can see every capacitor and stuff like that. Or you sort of have ICs, but those ICs were basically boxes with the discrete component inside them. And what has changed is that rather than discrete components, you have discrete microboards. And as I said before, there's a look, there's no logic to it. So you can be paying up to $50 US for the major board, which is the Arduino Mega. So it's saying, look, you're not supposed to complain, you don't know what to build a light robot, this is what it is. It's about 50% bigger and three times more outlets for it, and for the job. And in it, it's got memory and the ESP8266, which allows you to just copy the code in and it will talk to the internet. And so you've got all this aspect of it, and out of China, 50% off sale, right, it's $10, done, yeah, let's go. And with enough capacity, it has the capacity to do there'd be 0.25 degree thermocouples, fairly robust, and other circuitry for a hundredth of a degree thermocouple. So you imagine that you now say, hey teacher, here's this. What you do, you open the box, you put your experiment on it, and you can put up six temperature sensors on it, measure the mass of everything, measure the pH. It's all downloaded to kids' mobile phones. So, and you don't have to do a password, you don't have to ask anyone's permission, you don't have to be trained. A casual can do it. And it's cheaper than just buying a pair of scales, precision scales. And it will have superior performance to this. Now, how it gets superior performance to it and what it can do, that's what I'll put in the patent or the IP. So all this is, you couldn't get a patent for opening up the internet, working out how to program, and putting across your code. Say if you're in the United States, I'd be able to rock up and get a business going fairly easy. Out here in Australia, things are different. There is a small section of people, a small slither of the community where there's this entrepreneurial startups, but in general in suburban Australia, it's sleepy, negative, until you really start to build up strong enough to really punch through. Now, I can to sort of reveal this, that I just had to work out. One of the things I've learnt is
real eerie
building research projects. I knew basically together discrete components and had to cable a little bit from robotics, but it actually
some
from really, really old technology. Believe it or not, this is actually true. So, in 1948,
in the shadow of
World War II, people were winding up their research groups, which were built around Australia to do basically computational guidance of radar anti-aircraft systems. And from that came Australia's first computer and the fourth computer in the world, called CYRAC. And my father was the 17-year-old person who got a BSc at 17 years old, and he was the whiz kid, the very first software geek on CYRAC. And he was also, they only found out afterwards, the inventor of computer music. They pulled out all his computer music and all the stuff, and the originator of the first English language computer program. This is not conceptualizing it as binary, doing that, but actually words that you put in, and that's called in the program. So from that start, I had a lot of training. As you're training, Dad would describe to me how to invert matrices and what matrices were at a very young age, and I learnt them. And I also learnt a whole lot of basic things from the engineers who built it. This is in the late 60s, and there'd be certain things like wiring up discrete components. So back then, a discrete component was a transistor. A single transistor was a discrete component, and it had to have wiring going across. And there wasn't Rubin cable, and there was instead a twisted pair. And you had these cloth-coated thick copper wires, and you'd have to plait them. And there was this beautiful, basically knitting, the inside of the CYRAC computer is knitted. And this is where you braid your hair. And I had this natural idea. I sort of now realize, oh, I sort of know about putting discrete components around and wiring them up in a box and closing the lid. That is from that time, and I sort of had this sort of dark memory of it. It was when I was trying to nail the unit. Is that I've got the Arduino Mega, and I have to connect to a bank of five thermocouples. You know, how do I do that? And I could breadboard, you know, that's out, and then this wiring stuff is, you know, that's also out. No one wants to see these wires. And so essentially what happens is that there's these vertical wire acceptors, and they're about 5 millimeters high, and then into it you put a plug, which is another 5 millimeters high, and then the wire emits vertically up. So it's like building a skyscraper up, and the wire gradually goes over like a trajectory. It's sort of like a tennis court, but there's no Roger Federer or Rafa Nadal's skimming the thing. It's all like everyone sitting way up in the air. So you have these wires going across, and it looks like a dog's breakfast. And also, there's the problem that you're taking up three-dimensional space is just really, it's not a real difficult thing to go across. So, there's this wire braiding stuff, and two wires, very simple. So I used to do that with the robots. We have, how do we make up a cable? Well, you get the wires, two wires, get a power drill, and you've made yourself a cable. And then there's a little bit more to take a three-pin cable. You braid them, and obviously, so braiding does three, and you can braid a three-twisted pair cable. And it's one of the things that the technicians back in the day, when they were putting things together, they would have cups of tea, just talking, doing other things, and it would be so imbued into them that they would just be able to braid. And now this braiding, I was looking at, you know, 10 wires, how you do that, and essentially you get the 10 wires and you braid up basically a cyclone wire fence, you know, which is big, and then you pull it out and it shrinks down. And dare I say, that was a bit yuck. And still, at the end of this, it didn't have the ability to go into these 5mm vertical holders. So I can sort of talk about this at the moment. So, one of the things you do is, now, one of the things that I've done, and it's sort of, for me, it's a bit strange because I'm memorizing or relearning these things, you know, relearning to solder, relearning to do these sorts of things, and new skills emerge or new ways of doing it. I would not normally basically have four hands. There's left, right hands, and the top three fingers and the bottom two fingers operating. I wouldn't be normally able to do that. But, you know, things coming back a little bit differently. So we have the thing that we need the basic current carry capacity of the wire, which is reasonably thick wire, and we want them to be insulated. But the insulation is great because it can be coloured, but it's also thick and heavy and gives the resilience of the wire. So a piece of motor winding wire is enameled, and I did a YouTube about how to strip the enamel off the end of one of these with a engraving tool and a polisher. It's so quick and so reliable. The thing is not to use wire wrap wire, basically not to use wire wrap wire. And I suppose I think you could use wire. So wire wire is high nickel content wire, low resistance. So I don't know how that works, but it's a very stiff wire, and that is it. When you bend it, it doesn't relax. So if you bend it, it keeps the actual, if you wire wrap it, it remains tightly wrapped, whereas if you had steel, you'd wrap it and the steel would want to stretch out. So it's got something to do with its crystal structure, such that when you bend it, it stays bent. So yeah, but copper wire is another thing. It's sort of ductile, and so you can put it in a gentle bend and it will stay there. So the big question is, how do you do this? And I was sitting with the telly, with the kids, doing a bit of this wire wrapping, and the braiding, it just didn't feel good in your hands braiding it. And I thought, well, there has to be a better way. And indeed, there is a better way. You can actually do this incredible thing with this wire. So you get some copper wire, take out a loop of the wire, sort of you sort of fold it back on itself such that there's 5 centimetres folding back. So bend it through 180 degrees and then you twist it tight for about a centimetre. And this will have a little loop where it's got some minimum radius and then be twisted really tight. And there'll be roughly a centimetre there. And at this point, now just you're just going to have to listen to it and follow it, because if I describe it, the description is more in the way it's been made. Then with that, you rotate it 90 degrees, so it now makes a right angle with your wire. Okay, important thing. You then have here 3 centimetres sticking up, because it's 5 and it's, you know, well, more than 1, it's 3 sticking up, and a single wire going up at 90 degrees, but it's off to the right, it's twisted with a loop coming back up to right there. And then what you do again is you then fold it a centimetre up such that the wire then comes, so it finishes at the actual loop. So it's another, so it's, it goes twist 180 degrees, twist, rotate 90 degrees, go up, twist 180 degrees, so it's now going back down across through the loop. And then you've got this loop at the top there, you twist that again across, and then you twist it all the way down till it meets again, and then you pull the wire out, the remaining centimetre wire out, and there you go. So you have basically what looks like a little sword. Suddenly at the end, you've got your copper whiting wire, and you've twisted it, and you now have a sword. And this is interesting. Now, this is all enameled, so it's all high temperature, but you have something here which is now enameled and can go in. So what you do is you get your engraving tool and you buff off the on one of the hand guards of your little copper wire sword you've built, twisted hand guards, you buff it off, and you buff off as much enamel as possible. Then you coat it with a tiny amount of solder, and if it builds up, you get your solder sucker up and sucker off. Now, to be sure, there will be copper on the outside, and the inside of this will have some enamel on the inside. Then you'll have this loop, and that, depending on what you do, that loop will have a bit of solder in it. You then cut that at an angle, so you get your cutters. Now, I have my absolute favourite cutters, which are like a pair of teeth that go down. You cut that down, and you have there a plug which can go nicely into your Arduino board female holder vertically up, and out of it will come at 90 degrees a wire straight away. Now, above that will be a little loop of wire, so you can, this is your holder inner, so you can actually pop this in, and onto that loop you can actually put a little paper tag saying what's there. So what you've done is that you've transformed your Arduino Mega Board from something which needs a shield, and you've naturally got things going up, to something which is nice and flat. Now, there is a problem that you've got to say for the 3.3 volts and the 5 volts create a farm of these receptacles. I've got to think about exactly how to do that. But we now have a series of wires which connect to various points and pull across, and there's these wires pull across, and you have them at a bunch point, and so you can then bend them down, bunch them, and you have, say, up to 10 wires, depending on what you're trying to go off your Arduino board, going to where you want it to go, and you hook them together, and what do you do? You then bind them together. Now, the thing to do here is rather, there's just, I have a temptation to twist that. You know, once that point in time, do a few twists one way and then two twists the other way. So, like windlass it. Like hold it at two, hold it by two pliers, and then poke your a nail between it, windlass it, and you then create a little hole in the centre where it's windlassed across. That's my temptation to do it, because this sort of wire construction is the sort of basic farming windlassing of fences and all that type of stuff to keep your sheep and horses in. I don't know, and that will create an actual little hole which you can then tie it to your base. However, what I think is actually more practical is you just gather the wire together, wrap some copper wire around the outside, again insulated wire, and then on these plastic cases you can just get your soldering iron, burn a hole through, drop the two wires and flare the wires out, and that will hold your wires in position, and that's sort of modifying the basic ideas from the early Cyrac computer, the early thing where you had these massive power supplies and transformers and heaters and fans, or I can't really remember if I ever saw a fan in Cyrac, but you know, the thing would really, I don't know if anyone's ever smelled valves, they've got this real high voltage electric dusty thing sort of there. They heat up and they're charged, and sort of just dust flies into it. Now, back then you had some pretty heavy electrics going on. Here's sort of the same thing. It's sort of like we have gone into the discrete components, back into the integrated circuits. The integrated circuits have now shrunk so much and become so powerful, they now require a dedicated board around them, and so they're now microboards. So what's really sort of happened is that everything has shrunk, and waiting in the wings is this old technology of doing it. So that's what I'll do to actually put it forward. And as I said before, I'm just very lucky that hard up for cash and not really wanting to spend any more money. It's hard to say. What will happen is that I would normally take 1 or 2 weeks before I would spend $50, because I would do thorough market research and reason that this was the best use of money or something like that to go through, or I needed to buy something like my first I2C or IC2 module. I needed to buy something like that to see how it works, and I'm now going to engage in a system. I'm at a stage that I will test this till it's destroyed, so it's now time to buy backup parts. So those, and what actually happens is the thing gets destroyed, and of course the backup parts get delivered to the wrong address, go back to China, and you know, all this palaver. So I'm quite enthusiastic. Well, not enthusiastic. I finally cut it. There's only just small fly in the ointment, and this is the best way to extend a board with the female things. I don't think a bread board is the way to do it. I think there is another method ready to go. So there's only a few pins there. The ground pin, 3.3 volt and 5 volt pin, where you need multiples across them. And so essentially in the research prototype, say if I was more on my game, I would have sat back and calculated the current load of everything, but this is more of my dull self saying, oh. So what happens is I unplug it, and a single thermocouple and a few LEDs operates for 4 or 5 hours before it carcasses itself. And if I'm going to do 5 thermocouples and just go for broke, obviously it's, and the mobile phone batteries, I bought the cheapest, lowest power one, I can go up, but the price goes up. Of course, there's a price intercept point where it's best to go to your traditional power banks, and you have the advantage is that if it all goes pear-shaped, you've got a power bank there, or you can use your power bank for other things to go across. So that's where it is at the moment. And as I'm walking, it's getting all its data. And look, there is really, compared to a set of scales which sit on the shelf, and you put it down there, and you expect it to work perfectly as you switch it on. Well, wouldn't it be nice to know if it has a settling time? Wouldn't it be nice to know, does it have a drift time? And of course, you can see all these sorts of things. Or you've got a thermocouple, it's got a particular noise shape characteristic. Wouldn't it be nice if you could mathematically model that one and apply top statistics and get a factor of 10 higher current out of it, even though it is actually mucking up? So the thermocouple I have at the moment is mucking up, and I think I know how to do it. So every once in a while it sort of misses half a dozen. Look, I think it missed 5. It's probably a crap thermocouple. So this is the advantage: if you've got 5 thermocouples, you can my software can assign stuff to it. So essentially the difference is that what you can do is you can have this up on the shelf, and it can you've got a class, the computers can work out and run a test on Thursday and report back to you by SMS that 3 of your units have developed a problem. Or you can monitor it over a period of time, and you can do quality control as if you've never lived before. So this is pretty much what will happen with toasters and devices. They're suddenly going to not last 10 years, they'll last 50 years. And that's just because people can know how to do it. They'll be able to, once you've got one of these things, it can monitor the current and the temperature all over your little doodad. And things will change. But of course, there is a world of difference between building an Internet of Things vacuum cleaner, which the person using it won't be all that grateful. There's not a lot of people working, but if you're doing Internet of Things chemistry demonstration, you've got hundreds of kids looking at it, and hundreds of kids where if they want to know things, it opens up for them. So that's the plan. And as it says, as one door closes, hopefully another one opens up. So hopefully as the door closes on me, being able to get in and teach students against commission standards, that out of this world thing will happen. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'm nearly home, just a block or so from home.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.